Good morning, all. This is John Conklin. We're now in session for the Funding Methodology Subcommittee of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. We're just going to do a few administrative tasks, and the first is roll call. I'm just going to do that, make sure everybody on the phone knows everybody who's present, and then for those on the phone, so starting off with me, Judge Conklin, I'm present. Judge Cope?
Here.
Judge Good?
Here.
Judge Holland?
Here.
Judge Kuhl?
Here.
We're told Judge Lee is unavailable for today. Rebecca Fleming?
Here.
Sherry Carter?
Here.
Mike Hamrick? I'm sorry.
Sam?
Sorry. I'm calling everybody Mike. Sherry Lewis? Mike? Sherry Carter? Jeff Lewis?
Jeff Lewis is here. I'm not sure about Sherry.
Sherry's here too. All right. We know Mike Planet is not. Mike, are you on the line? So Mike's missing in action. Mike Body?
Here.
Tanya?
Here.
Who am I missing? Chris Volkers? No sign of her. And Tammy Grimm. Okay. We have everybody present. Next on the agenda. Oh, I am sorry. Staff present. Right, vote. Exactly. Paula, do we have anybody, any other staff present on the phone? Sorry, Leo. Okay. Start for that, all right?
That's the toughest part.
That is.
Usually it is.
Right. Yep, starting off on a strong foot.
And you don't right. Have to use my last name?
I've learned not to use your last name for a variety of reasons. Now, I would assume everybody has, in detail, reviewed the minutes of the February 5th meeting. Do you have a motion to approve those minutes?
Hello.
Second?
Second.
Any opposed? Hearing no opposition in favor, the minutes of the February 5th meeting are approved. All right. Next on the agenda is public comment. I'm told, Colin, we don't have any?
We do not.
Excellent. All right.
So, may I make a request?
You sure may.
Would you please consider moving item 6 to being either item 3 or 4 for those of us that have earlier flights?
And that's anybody opposed to that, that's fine. Sherry came in, Jen and Judge Kuhl came in earlier and asked for that, recognizing that everybody's trying to make some flights today and that sometimes these agendas move at a different pace than we anticipate. These agenda items are always set this way to allow them to move around. So let's take item 6. Sherry, your preference is after item 2?
Yeah, I think so.
You think? Okay. So remind me when you get there, because you know me, sometimes I just move down to the agenda, so I'm writing it in here, but we're going to bump item 6 up to after item 2.
Thank you.
Any other issues, anything else anybody would like to address before we work through the agenda items? Did anybody else join us on the phone? All right, hearing none. So we're moving first to the civil assessment and the workload-based allocation and funding methodology for an update. I'm going to turn to Colin for most of that, but the work is just beginning. As you all know, we have a working group that is, I guess the best way to say it, is drilling down into civil assessments. I recognize that civil assessments in and of themselves are extremely sophisticated, complicated, and part of that complication comes from gathering information and trying to figure out, with 58 different counties and agreements and all those factors that come into play when we discuss civil assessments and how it will impact WAPM, exactly how do we make that decision based upon the information that we have. So there's a working group comprised of Sherry Carter, myself, Rebecca Fleming, Judge Good, Judge Holland, Jeff Lewis, Mike, Roddy, and Tanya, that are putting in significant amounts of work on this issue already. We had a phone call as recently as last week, I think, where we were candidly trying to continue to get our arms around what is a very complicated issue. And that is, how will, if at all, civil assessments impact WAPM? So that being said, I open it up for discussion. Colin, any updates, or Rebecca?
Or Tanya.
Or anybody in the working group, or Sherry, or anybody.
No, I think right now, this is Tanya, that Colin is busy trying to gather data, looking at what is in existence before we actually go out to the trial courts and talk to them. We're trying to get our hands around exactly what it is we want and what we hope to accomplish once we see this data. So I think that's where we are at the moment. Colin, anything?
Very quickly, just to get a little more detail on what was discussed on April 20th. So there were basically just a general discussion by the working group to talk about the flow of the civil assessment revenue, current projections of civil assessment revenue based on the impact of the amnesty program. Discussions related to agreements and other areas, and gathering more information from the courts. So the next step is once I've done sufficient research on what we do know at the judicial branch level regarding agreements, a survey will be sent out to the courts to confirm that the information is complete.
And if I could too, Colin and Judge, from that phone call, I remember the thing that struck me most was just even amongst our group, and then I had to go back and check for King's, was the maintenance of effort dollars that courts are obligated to fund. Some do, some don't. The disparity in the calculations, but then whether or not documentation was even available going forward to determine the lifespan of this MOE, what the terms were and how they were arrived at. I checked in King's. The board has nothing, and I went through all my predecessors' files and see nothing, and finance didn't have anything other than the amount.
I'm going to call everybody Mike today. So, Jeff, I appreciate your comments, but now Mike has his hand up. Mike?
Well, you know, and to go even further, it's amazing how many memories come back when you start to think about something. For some of us, those deals were cut at the municipal court level. Because civil assessment started in roughly 93 for the early adopters. And unification, state funding didn't hit till 97. Unification in 99. It's very likely, and I know in our case, some of our deals traced back to the municipal courts, the four municipal court districts. All we know is what was agreed to at the time of unification, what was in effect, but they weren't even quote-unquote superior court deals because the superior court did not have civil assessments. So this is going to go back all the way to the prehistory.
Okay. Sherry said earlier when man was started walking.
When man, yeah.
In some cases, actually unravel all the deals because you know what the various municipal courts did and didn't do. But I don't think a lot of people are going to have the wherewithal. But it'll be interesting. But it even goes back further than I have given the credit for.
Go ahead, Sherry.
I think in many counties, it was really the county just going to DOF like it had 5-6 other times and saying, under the trial court act, we've lost more money than we thought. Here's our book. You owe it to us. That's what I think happened in Los Angeles because there are no paperwork, no deals that we found related to civil assessment anywhere. I think, you know, this is the fifth or sixth time, if you look at the great sheet that Colin did that shows all of the MOE offsets that were allowed. Counties just went to the DOF and said, we're keeping our books. We're keeping track, and we continue to lose money, and we want to be made whole, and so this was yet one more of those MOE offsets. So deals or no deals, I think in many counties it's just, you know, the county saying we lost more money, and this is how it was. Yes.
Do you have a comment, Judge?
No, but I'm just wondering whether, if we don't have those deals documented, if and as civil assessments decline and maybe evaporate, was the deal you get this much out of civil assessments or you, the deal you get this much?
It's all a judicial council decision. So, you know, and I kind of get to a point where I'm not really sure the deals matter.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
If, you know, I think that we have to, you know, take a look at the MOE offset and whether the right decision was made to find the funds, since this is the only MOE offset the legislature refused to make whole. So that, to me, is separate and independent from the decision on how do you count civil assessments collected when you're looking at WAFM, if you do at all? Because I know we kind of are morphing them together, but to me they are two separate things because I'm not really sure those old deals make any difference anymore.
Mike? Civil assessment, I think, represents the last of a whole series of MOE adjustments that started occurring in 97.
Right.
It wasn't the only one.
No, there were.
And so you had good and bad and ugly fights between courts and counties and the judicial council from day one, which was why there was the dispute resolution mechanism. Somebody had to ultimately decide which number it was going to be. And civil assessment was the last gasp of that MOE determination effort. At the end of the day, whatever decision was made affected all the branch now because it ended up setting the base funding for the trust fund from what the remaining counties were going to continue to put in. I think we've got to keep that. It wasn't a one-off issue. It was the last of a whole series of MOE adjustments that took weeks, if not months, between the various entities to do.
But the difference with this one is it's the only one the legislature didn't
feel. So part, it becomes clear that part of the problem here is defining the problem.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we don't know. There's all these different agreements.
It's also not true that it's not the only one the legislature didn't feel, Sherry, because when the MOEs were set up, the state got whatever the counties gave. The state didn't kick in any kind of different dollars or anything. It just said that this is now the base for state court funding.
What they did, though, Mike, my understanding is, and Colin, correct me if I'm wrong, is on the other times where the counties came forward and said, we've lost more fines and fees, we've lost, the legislature allowed there to be an offset. So the counties were fine, but
we need to talk about that, and I want to take it because that's not my recollection at all. Everything was set up at the 94-95 base.
Right.
And at that point, there was nothing but growth. I mean, it was set, I think, at a certain level to so that the state wouldn't have to address that issue. And so I don't recall any backfill to local revenue.
No, to the counties.
To the counties.
To the counties.
Yeah,
to the counties. Their payments were made whole. Here, what's different is now, based on the snapshot of the collections that was in place at the time, somehow they felt that that should fund from the court what is owed to the grant.
The only thing that was backfilled to the counties was a couple of years in when the state purposely added additional general fund dollars to buy out the MOE obligations for the smallest 20 counties or something.
Yes.
And that was a zero-sum game to the courts.
Sure. Oh, it never impacted.
And, of course, the county's interest, CSAC's interest, was in doing that for everybody.
Sure.
And the state said, we're obviously not going to go there because the geometric progression meant that it was just too big of a
matter. Well, I think the working group can be reminded of the legislative research that's been done and how it was all worked out. But, yeah, I think that's good for the working group to continue its work.
Gather information to understand the issue.
Right.
If, and then the question is, you're right, I think Sherry said it, do all those agreements, they even matter? I mean, what's the real issue as far as civil assessments go today?
Right.
The only time it would matter is if there was a trade-off, this for that, and if the court gave up something in exchange for keeping civil assessments.
Then they would lose.
And then you lose the civil assessments and don't get back what you traded up for. That's the only time I think it would matter.
Sure.
Right. So those counties are on the hook, and they're depending on civil assessments for the on-the-hook dollars, and you take them away, then how do you make the counties whole for the on-the-hook?
Or even less specific than that is, and Sherry knows Mike Court's books better than I do, but if there was something that we said, all right, the county will keep these dollars in exchange for the court will keep these dollars, then that's the agreement that I've been arguing is hard to unwind. But, you know, other than that, I don't disagree with you. The agreements are really not very important.
Yeah, because in my original agreement way back in the dark ages with Mike, I think our court got the first $200,000 of the growth on the civil assessment was straight to the court to offset some drug court deal thing that we had going, and then there was a split after that. Now, I know that deal has changed, but I think there was a lot of that kind of stuff, and it really kind of more matters, I agree, with where we are now and what's the impact going to be in the event of.
Right.
in the event of?
It's deterioration.
Right.
The deterioration of the dollars.
It's not elimination. Right,
right, because that's.
Appears to be the.
The yeah. The direction?
Right, I think it's the best. I mean, that's, we've got to look at the overall.
For a word that
right. I mean, I don't want to say anything inappropriate. I hope I'm not. But you know, the politics behind this is there's a significant, I think, movement that civil assessment should evaporate and no longer be part of, for a variety of reasons, of course.
If that's the case, we would have done a lot of this for nothing.
Yeah, right.
Hope you're wrong, but I hear you.
By the way, my client is
doing this. Would like to know what the end game is.
There's another mic in the room. Go ahead, Mike.
My apologies for coming late. Sorry about that. So all this playing around with that civil assessment, but also wait till they see the fiscal note on, you know, some of these bills that are pending and whatnot. And, that, you know, and there's a huge backfill number on the state side that's come up somewhere, and I don't know that that's, you know, so I don't know. You can't just say civil assessments are gone because it's so tied into all these other, you know, 40 programs and the court.
I'm worried less about civil assessments per se than I am about the whole issue with license suspensions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Because if you take that out,
you take that
I think
out.
The entire system could collapse on itself. So that piece of 881, SB 881, concerns me more than civil assessments.
But then, honestly, you don't have an enforcement mechanism,
no,
right? I mean, you take that out.
So then it's going to be civil assessments and base fines and revenues and the whole nine yards. So
yeah, that'll be a huge hit.
Amnesty on steroids. Right? I mean,
essentially.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Yeah. A couple of comments. In Riverside, the special, our deal with the county is we get every penny we collect. And we collect a lot. And we do it well and we do it efficiently. Last fiscal year, it was about $17 million. With the amnesty program, it's probably going to be down around 11 or 12. So it's a huge hit already, and just some armchair math through WAFM, it would be reduced for us to $7 million. And, you know, I think it's such an unreliable source of revenue, and there's a lot of optics problems with
Jeff, are you still on the line, Jeff Lewis? Is there anybody on the line?
You have to dial back in.
Okay.
Well, there might be some people that are just listening only.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that did Justin dial back in?
I think
he was on before.
There's three people on the line, but they're popped.
They maybe
sound like that.
Yeah,
right.
Okay.
Well, you know, if we don't provide input for this year's plan still, the legislature will set a marker without our input, and then in the following year,
we live with that marker.
Why they should change it.
Right. I think you make a valid point. So I think we need to clarify that the funding methodology is not based upon the county to which the judge is assigned.
Mm-hmm.
The funding methodology is a WAFM distribution, a true WAFM distribution for staff.
Right. And my concern would be if we're arguing to them on the basis of here's a particular trial court need for facility or whatever, legislators being legislators are going to want to know that why that money didn't come to them in that way. So
I think the
arguments should be consistent with the theory.
I think there's a couple of ways of doing this. It seems to me that the judicial salary has to be in there, but that's paid by the controller. So,
mm-hmm.
So that's not part of
right.
Looking at this would be to say, take WAFM. And what's the average number of court employees statewide? What's the amount of money being divided by WAFM? And the average per staff is X number of dollars, $75,000, whatever it is. And whatever we think the ratio should be, 1:6:1.
That's
right.
The money. That's the
amount of money is the money that should be put into WAFM.
You WAFM it.
Yeah, put into WAFM to keep everything the way it is right now, which is what you like legislature.
Right.
And then the facilities part of it seems to me is something a teeny bit different.
Right.
And the only thing I'm struggling with is, don't we have a mechanism for dealing with facility money branch-wide, and should we particularize it to a county, or should we put it into the pot and let our system get that money to the right place?
It may be some of the breakdown is, historically, you couldn't ask, they wouldn't let you ask for a judge unless you had a facility. Hmm. I mean, it was kind of that hidden cost that they weren't going to deal with. But having established a judicial needs process that is independent and irrespective of local conditions, in other words, staffing and or space does become an issue where a very needy county doesn't otherwise have a facility. So how are we going to end up supporting that effort versus the next county up may have a courtroom and doesn't need a buck for buildings? I mean, that creates a conundrum for us.
Well, I really think that gets into the whole facility planning process, which is really a different process. And
I agree.
More,
so do you think facility is a factor?
And more recently, they have not approved creating additional courtrooms for growth. So that, you know, those are decisions that have already been made to us, I'm afraid, where we are. Speaking, by the way, of the court where judges are sharing, literally, courtrooms and chambers. So.
Do I have this correctly, by the way? Not court-specific funding. This is for funding. Not court-specific statewide average for the salary. And for benefits, I'm not sure exactly what you would use for that.
No. What I was saying was, if under WACM we get, let me just say, $2 billion,
mm-hmm.
and we have, say, statewide 2,000 court employees,
mm-hmm.
you divide $2 billion by 2,000, and you get whatever that is, $100,000 on the average per employee, all in, salary, benefits, whatever, you know, VLS, labor costs. So now you say, how many staff come with a judgeship? And if it's the 3-to-1 number, if it's the 8.87 number, it's then $300,000 or it's $887,000 that goes with that judgeship.
Mm-hmm.
But then that money goes into WAFM and gets distributed, and whoever gets the judgeship gets some WAFM share of that money, which is less than they would get normally, but right now they've been getting more per judge than an over-judge county
right.
is getting.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, it's a lousy, it's everything, but we're trying to make it consistent and rational, and we can't, you know, fix everything all at once. So it seems to me we just stay with what we decided is rational.
So it would be WAFM. It'd be WAFM based only then.
Right.
That's what we don't change anything. If you get a new judge, the dollars for that new judge are distributed pursuant to WAFM.
But that is a change before.
If
that's not how they
did it. Before
right.
we didn't have WAFM.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Well, there is no challenge. Real problem is going to come if and when WAFM is ever fully funded. This pops up. Then what do we do? That's a problem for the next generation.
So far, there's not been a reason to worry.
Court.
I wouldn't lose any hair over it, Mike.
I don't have any hair over it. Thank you. Payback. You waited, didn't you?
So, Rebecca makes a good point. Do we need to do a motion? And what this would be is moving to make a recommendation to TICBAC as a whole. That TICBAC would approve the funding methodology for new judge allocation to take to the Judicial Council. And so let's clarify, is there a motion as to what that would be? Collins written, WAFM based. It's not court specific, funding divided. Well, I guess that's the easiest way to say it is WAFM based solely.
Right.
Any new judge.
But I think we should use the component that Judge Good talked about.
I'm not sure that captures what I said.
No, these are the total funding needs, so $2 billion.
Take the total WAFM, not the need, the total funding.
Cost divided by the employees.
What we're receiving from the legislature is divided by WAFM.
Oh, the 73.94%, whatever it is.
Yeah, I'm trying to get to that number.
Oh,
Uh-huh. And maybe I've got the numbers a little bit wrong.
But we do need to take the actual cost and not the average salary we currently use, because the average salary is applied to our individual BLS. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why probably staff is starting down that road, because if it goes to one county, it may or may not cost more than another county. But if we're saying, no, we want to use WAFM, you would probably take the actual average cost, including benefits and everything else, to say, multiply that by the three or however many numbers we think belongs to the new judge, and then put it in WAFM.
Well, but suppose you look at it differently. Suppose you said that the money that comes to the funding, the facilities out of there, I'm trying to say, if we get $2.7 billion or whatever we get, and we have 2,000 employees, you divide the 2.7 by 2,000, and you get the average amount of the per employee. And then you multiply that by the number of staff that most of the new judge show. That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. That's how we get to the ask. And then whatever that money is, we plug it to
WAFM.
So the one thing I guess I would say is current funding isn't actually allocated based on WAFM, right? It's partially, but not fully.
I know.
Now, if you actually use WAFM funding need and divide that by the actual needed FTEs, then if that's you're actually doing across 58 courts.
One thing I like about that is the WAFM need would kind of jack up the number.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Well, the FTE need also is a higher number than your employees, so it may not jack up the number. But
if you use the WAFM funding need divided by the actual number of employees.
That total.
That may not be. I don't know if I would recommend that. You can do that, but I don't think that would be fair, because you're saying this is our need based on this number of employees, but actually we're going to use this number of employees instead to figure, like, that's why I would say I don't necessarily agree with that.
Yeah, saying, yeah.
The total WAFM need also includes an OE&E piece.
It does.
And so you're elevating the salary and benefits.
Right. And you can explain that and see if they fund it.
Wait a minute. But those new employees are going to have to use consumable supplies and things that OE&E is based on an FTE, so in some ways that's fair.
Yeah. And we do use a staffing complement a lot, say when we're requesting staff at the state level, we do have a staffing complement.
Okay.
So we can say it's akin to that.
So, Judge, did you have a motion?
It's something that already understand.
I'm
working on it. Let me tell them, and I don't want to make a motion that's not right. So you're saying take our WAFM need divided by our RAS need.
Yeah, basically the positions that you use to calculate that need.
That's okay.
So that way you're saying this is our average across 58 courts.
Yep.
Yeah. And that would add a component, not just the RAS, but also flow, but it would add a component for how many judges.
Yeah. Right. And then you would multiply that by your ratio.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Now it's how many positions should fall to the request with a new judge. And three kind of, you've got your
JA.
Three or four, I don't know.
Or 3 points.
You do have relief coverage, so.
Colin, do you have a thought on that? The three was generally discussed as appropriate, but
I don't have a thought on that one. That's
if we're going to make, we can ask for the moon.
Yes.
Let's ask for the moon for a change.
Okay.
Sure. For the bottom line and getting
five.
Control
right.
of that. I mean,
five.
They can work the magic, yeah.
Five.
PA, JA, research attorney, court reporter on relief factor.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
If we took our RAS need and divided it by our judges, the number of judges, what kind of number would we get?
That's actually how we calculated the 8.87 ratio. We would have to update that, but that
was correct. Divided that by the existing judges plus the traditional needs assessment. So what we assessed was the number of judges needed. And suppose we just keep talking about what the branch should look like.
Well, that's what we do. So we actually do the RAS FTE divided by the judicial needs assessment.
And what would that get? What number would that get?
That was the 8.87.
If it was direct funded, I would have an issue with that, because I think not every court needs 8.87 for every judge. But I think across the branch, I think there's a lot of people who have multiple hats going on that could actually, if we're WAFMizing it, it could even
I like out. It. I really like it.
I'm a big fan of talent legislature. This is what you need to have
Perfect.
A judicial branch in democratic society. This is what it's going to cost you. You don't want to pay for it, I get it, but this is what it's going to cost.
Lee, did you have a comment?
I was, you know, 8.87, I know, sounds like a daunting number, and I was going to explain a little bit about the positions that might go into that. So it is the, you know, the direct courtroom support. It would be a, you know, portion of court reporter. It would be the back office staff.
Yeah,
but it also includes, right, records management. So you have to think about it, about all the small components of people that would contribute toward moving cases through a courtroom.
Yeah, right.
So it's also supervisors and managers, a small portion of the
right.
So 8.87 doesn't mean that there's eight bodies in the courtroom.
Oh, no,
the judge.
No.
It's all those portions of staff that that feed into case processing.
So it's an easily justifiable request. If some, if they were to come back and say, what do you mean you need 8.? There's not 8.87 people in the courtroom. We need to help them understand there's 8.87 support in the courthouse.
Right.
For that judicial
intake,
position.
Intake, scanning, records.
And recognize that's the average.
Right. Yeah. Some is 10, and some are 10, and some are 5, which is where you get.
So I think it's aspirational, yes, but the whole thing's aspirational. Let's do it.
Yeah, but I agree. But I think aspirations are good as long as we can justify them, and we can justify this aspiration.
Yeah.
Right.
It seems to me that's the only number that can be justified. 3 is an arbitrary number. 5 is an arbitrary number.
Right. 8.87. Is that what you're going to say?
I was also going to mention that when Judge Jarr, you know, the previous administrative director, had toured several courthouses, he asked that to courts where he visited, you know, how many staff to judge, and he recorded his results, and they all came in right in the range of 8 to 10, which made us feel like, you know, at least that there was this further justification for what we were seeing on paper.
There's empirical data to support that need.
Right.
When I was PJing legislators around our court, I wouldn't show them the courtrooms. I would say, let me show you where you spend your money.
Right.
And I would take them through all the back offices and show them all the back offices and show them why we need so much staff. And I think it's an education process. I think if we, you know, we ought to put together a little statement of where that those eight people are, those 8.87 people are.
Right. Most judges realize that the least important number of moving cases through the courthouse is the judge.
Yeah.
Mike?
Are we talking strictly judges or judicial officers? As part of the discussion. Commissioners, because our number includes commissioners.
Yeah, the judicial assessment need is based on judicial officers.
Right, judges plus commissioners, and that equally.
Okay, so do we have a motion?
I second this. Good motion.
Okay, whatever that is.
Do you want to resolve the facilities component of this? Have you resolved that?
No, we haven't.
No, we haven't.
That's
not resolved.
That's
so,
right,
can I look down to see if it's correct?
Okay.
Okay. So the WAFM need divided by the RAS need will equal the dollars times the number of staff needed will be the ask. The ask will then be distributed by the WAFM number, by the WAFM process.
Right.
The number of staff needs should be calculated based on the judicial need or judicial position need divided by the RAS need.
No, the RAS need divided by the judicial number need.
Okay. Which is 8.87.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is.
Okay.
Yeah, it changed a little bit.
Okay.
Okay, got it.
Okay. So Judge Good,
I move what she said.
Okay.
And we'll second it, right?
There's a motion. Is there a second for this? I have a question about it because I'm not clear how that, I don't have any opposition to it, but I'm not clear how it addresses the fact that we're somewhere between 2/3 and 75% funded by WAFM. If we're going to be funding, if we're going to be dividing this funds by WAFM, but we're not fully funded by WAFM at the court level, then I'm not clear how that addresses it. And it might, I just don't get it.
Well, I think this applies it under the same model, and we still have a 25% ask for funding to make it whole.
I'm actually going to the second step. I get it that we asked the legislature for funding completely, but then when we're dividing it up among the courts, we're not dividing it up to the courts that are getting those judgeships. And I don't oppose that. If we were at 100% WAFM funded, I have no problem with that. But we're not. And is that addressed by distributing this, allocating this funding, distributed by WAFM?
on it is actually whether you direct fund a court or whether you WAFMize the funding, I think you're going to have the whole table readjust.
Sure.
And so I think really either way you're going to get to the same end point where it adjusts where people are on the scale. I think what this does is it starts us thinking down that path of culturally of we're WAFMizing everything right at the get-go and not necessarily having everybody go way up, way down, sideways. That's my view on it.
Yeah, I think it would be more detrimental to direct fund because if we're going to apply the WAFM every year.
But I'm not arguing for direct fund.
Well, but I think the same end point as far as I think the table adjusts. I just don't think it's such a huge dramatic change to those courts that are receiving a judgeship.
My concern is, my problem with it is, we're saying, well, we fund you by your caseload, by your workload, and not by the number of judges you have. So we're going to do this, including with this funding. But that's just not true. We don't yet fund by workload alone. So if it all works out, fine. I just don't understand.
But I guess, you know, the other side of the equation is, you're right, we're funding by workload and not by judge need. But I go back to the idea that for those folks who are close to or at 100% of their judicial need, you do have to, at the local level, continue to support those resources, workload be damned. And so you're getting a far lower percentage of your workload funding to support 100% of your judge need. That's just as problematic as the inverse, which is what I think Judge Cope is arguing, talking about.
No, I think that's true. There are two extreme sides of that.
And both of them are bad.
They are both bad. And the good news is when you look at page 51, we are getting closer as a percentage of WAFM needs. I mean, it's all depressing because our average is less than 74% of need, but courts are moving closer when you look at 16-17.
That's because filings are down, right?
No, I think WAFM is working, too. Yeah. A lot of money's been moved under WAFM.
You know, theoretically, if we were all at 74% of need, so we were all equally funded,
right,
you still have the problem of an underjudged court getting additional judicial resources. How do they accommodate that? How do they address that? Because theoretically, everybody's the same.
Yep.
I think there's no easy answer to that question. But you could very well have all of us equally funded on the workload side and still have counties getting additional judicial positions to catch up on the judicial side of the house, which creates different imbalances for those courts.
But think about it. They're doing the same number of cases. Adding a judgeship is not going to add to the workload. What it's going to do is make each judge's load or some judge's load a little bit lighter and some courtroom clerk's load a little bit lighter. But from the back office, the same number of cases are flowing through, and they're just going to be dividing it into a couple of more courtrooms. So they're already struggling with that number of cases and managing that flow of paper or electrons. And now, as John said, we're the least important in terms of moving cases through the system. It just means that some people are going to have their cases heard a little bit sooner. Some people are going to have a little bit more time to have their case heard. But it's not going to affect really the fundamental amount of work that's being done.
It doesn't affect the fundamental amount of work, but it affects the distribution of resources. Because now, instead of hiring an IT tech, I'm going to have to hire another courtroom clerk.
Yeah.
Right. So
it's going to change the...
That's
a problem that those of us in appropriately judged courts with under-resourced dollars are facing today.
And I
wouldn't want to be in Dave Yamasaki's shoes for all the tea in China.
Yeah.
Because he's still got to support 79 judges or however many he's got with a significant, you know, so in some ways it's almost like, you know, I would say, take a judge, please, because
right,
get that IT check I need. Because you know, the dollars are going to be the same. It's how you allocate, right?
Don't you think, though, with that scenario where everybody's funded at the same, that's where the WAFM kind of starts to sink in a little bit, and you're starting to identify what the local differences are in decision-making and in benefits and all those other things, because that's what is going to make the imbalance between us.
So well, until we get the judge piece, until we get everybody equally judged, I guess, judgeships or whatever, it's still going to be problematic for
the
courts.
Oh, I agree. Great.
Go ahead, Mike.
So I'm an understaffed and underjudged court.
If I get one judge, my staff costs go up because I'm going to have to convert a lower-level position to a higher-level JA. So there's that side of the coin as well.
You'll get it.
I won't get the full count. I'll just get 158 of whatever the increase is for the Wofford.
Mike, I'm already there. I'm an overjudge. I'm not over. I'm at judge. I got enough judges, but I got enough staff. That's a different conundrum than being both under judge and under staff.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll get a bigger piece.
So I'm saying, in a sense, that's why Wofford
makes
sense.
It does.
How much bigger piece?
It depends on where you fall.
But I'm obviously not asking my question very well or stating my position very well, but if we were talking about a situation where we were all 100% funded at Wofford, all equally underfunded, then I would have absolutely no concern with just throwing it in the pot, dividing it up according to your percentage, our 5.2% of the caseload. But we're not. And we talk as if we're 100% funded by Wofford, but we're just not. And I'm not sure that this addresses it. It just kind of ignores it and moves right past it.
There's actually a chart that I want to refer you to. I don't have it memorized, but it shows that Wofford reallocates the money based on your relative underfunded nature. What chart is that, Colin?
So I'm sorry. I was replying to all the people saying they don't reply without.
So the point is that it still would meet, I think, what your concerns are, Judge Cole, because if you are more underfunded relative to the average, you will get a bigger chunk of whatever is put in WAFA than others. Colin?
Not an equal distribution.
What chart is it that shows the amount that was reallocated to the course? It shows the amount of,
So if you actually look at 6R, the handout that I gave you. At the very end of it, you'll see two things. There's the cumulative adjustments, including benefits and stuff like that, and then you'll see column AE, which is cumulative WAFM adjustments. So I think you're talking about the WAFM adjustments.
I am, but there's another chart that even does it better. But that's okay. But anyway, so just so I hear your concerns, and I think to put them in WAFM, the reason I like it, and originally I didn't start there, but the reason I like it is it does reallocate the dollars based on your relative need to the average, and it stays true to WAFM. What worries me is the one-off. It worries me to make exceptions to certain things because we tried really hard to stay true to it so that it would be easy to support. Okay, so if you look at 42, although it's hard to read, if you look at 42 and you look at the reallocation rate, which is B, that will show you the amount of money that's been, right? Isn't that the amount of money that's been reallocated?
No, so 42, this is actually the allocation adjustments that would occur in 16-17.
Right, but that's it. So if you go to Riverside, for example, you'll see that 126.7% was reallocated to you, whereas if you go to Kern, who's the most underfunded.
So that actually is a ratio that you use to calculate for every dollar that's
right.
reallocated currently, what you would receive.
Right.
Right.
That's what we're talking about.
Right.
We're talking about whether or not the underfunded corps would get a bigger share of whatever's put in the pot, and the answer is yes.
Not everything's been reallocated. So
we're saying the same thing. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's where the judges are.
But there is more.
Well, as Sherry said, this appears to be the truest to WAFM that we can get.
Right.
Not perfect by any means, but the truest we can get if we're going to stay with WAFM, which I think we have to do. It's the truest way to do it. Does that make you any more comfortable, Judge Kopar?
Well, I suppose it depends on later conversations about what happens when we get past 50%.
Do we have any committee members on the phone remaining? Jeff, are you still there?
I sure am. Back and forth, but I'm in.
Great. Did you hear our discussion and the motion?
I did not. It had already departed at that time.
Okay. Do
Do you have any objection? The motion was unanimously approved. Do you have any motion, any objection to abstaining?
I have no objection to abstain. I think if it was, if we were still on the judgeships and using the WAFM formula, then I was okay up to that point, but I didn't really hear the formal motion, Judge. So if I need to abstain, that's fine.
I think that's probably the cleanest way to do it. I don't mean to be disrespectful of your vote. I'm confident you would have been in voting aye as well, but since you didn't hear all the details, I think the cleanest way is just to show, based upon the breakdown of communication, you're abstaining from the vote.
That will suffice, Judge.
Sorry, Colin's working furiously to try to overcome the problem, so appreciate it. Now we're moving on to the facilities piece. And Judge Kuhl's point was, is this really part of, at this point?
Is there any way to unwind what's already done?
I tend to agree with it. It implicates the facilities at work, maybe the facilities modification committee, I don't know. I think at the appropriate time it needs to be addressed, but I don't know if we can do it today in the abstract.
When you say address, you mean addressed by kickback or just by facilities?
Well, I think facilities may have a role, and I think we have to look at it on a court-by-court basis. I don't know, and I don't even know if the money's
One of the things we could do is defer to them from a consulting position and ask them to give us their perspective on whether or not this is a kickback issue. Not that we don't have our own voice. Judge Good?
Mike, I have two little pieces. One, I don't know if this is part of what we're being asked. That part of the ask, being asked to add something for facilities, then I think we've got to have some conversation. The second concern I have is Natanya's point was if she doesn't have a space, she puts somebody on the lawn, she's probably going to rent some commercial space rather than put somebody on the lawn. Not necessarily a traditional, but maybe it is a traditional facilities question about leasing space. But if there's going to be some money that comes to specifically the lease space, I don't know how we do that, whether we just give that money into the pot and then ask facilities, please give it to Donnie so she can have a courtroom, or what. But I'm just concerned that there may be a solution other than let's build something or modify something.
Right, because I think there are three options. You have a facility modification issue that it could be, or it is a lease issue, or it's part of the new construction, whether it's a shell build out that's going to be now. So I think that
it's possible, for example, that the courts that are getting judgeships, there could be a process established to apply for money that pot of facilities dollars, and then a committee would decide, yay or nay. But it's particularized to the county, and then they could apply and,
Well, yeah, because from a leasehold perspective, it would be far different than a pull-out construction.
That's cool.
And I really like that.
Which takes back to your suggestion that I think this is something that there's another I've been working on, and we should, I think, suggest to them that it's an issue that we considered and tell us that they want input from us. I think it's there.
So we don't ignore it. As a matter of fact, we highlight it and say we are specifically not taking action on methodology for facilities funding, and we're deferring to them. If they are asking for us to take action, we'll ask them to guide us on the action that they are asking.
That's the only way to go.
Just to say in the abstract, here's the average cost per square foot of construction of, a courtroom, of an average courtroom, and say that sort of, over the great state courts, that would be the cost of expanding to that point. Some courts might need it, some courts might not, I guess, if they a courtroom already built and sitting there.
And there's always, in the short term, there's always other sources that the court can turn to. If it's an emergency need, for instance, from the now $10 million, or I don't know if this would play into the 1% potential change as well, but there's other short-term ways the court can get that money.
I really think Mike's comments were really
good about establishing some sort of, if even if we, you know, were to recommend that sort of issue, that they consider some, identifies that that pot of money is identified for utilization among those courts receiving, because all the needs will be different.
Okay, so is there, do we even need a motion? Judge Cope, did you have one? I mean, I think I do want to make it clear that we have a, that we have discussed this.
I think just generally, I think somehow the word there's a number of different pieces that different work groups, different rights committees, different that all have, you know, or may have an impact some way with new judgeships. You know, technology is one area, facilities is certainly one. It's not like we weigh in. I don't recall. Yeah. It's been a while since I've been on the committee, but we don't review the facilities modification funding plan, do we?
That's a separate committee.
But TICPAC doesn't.
No.
Get that, right? So that's right. I think facilities, somehow we need to get the words to facilities that maybe they should include, factor into however they rank their either new construction or facilities modifications, that new judgeships maybe ought to be included in part of that ranking.
I'm sorry. If you want a motion from me, it's that your suggestion go forward. That we communicate to the committee.
Okay. That's the motion. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. And we'll do that. One of the methods might be is I'll just communicate directly with Justice Hill. I mean, I can just say, here's what we discussed. Here's what we're doing. So I'm not sure we need to take it to council level. We're not doing it. Second.
Thank you.
We have already took the vote. All in favor, aye. Any opposed? And Jeff, are you still on there?
I am, and I'm in favor.
Thank you. Good. We got your vote on that one.
Yes, thank
okay,
you.
So now we're going to go, we're going to switch up the agenda. As Sherry's request, we're going to go to item six. I think we're actually running really well, but I want to have plenty of time to discuss that. So we're now moving. You know, does anybody need a short break? Food is here, but I don't know if people are ready to eat yet. All right, let's go to item six and see if we can get through that. Item six is a discussion of the changes to the WAFM components resulting in the 2016-2017 WAFM funding need estimate, as well as estimated WAFM adjustments in the same 2016-2017-18. Colin?
Okay, so we have updated, I would actually refer you to page 30 as being the, I'm going to take this out of my hair. I'm going to go call at the same time and make sure I know when it goes down. If you look at page 30, this provides a very high-level summary of the changes in the variables that the FMS previously approved the update process and timing of, and their impact on the estimated WAFM needs. So the actual change in the components, and then the impact on the WAFM needs. So you'll see that the most significant impact of, and then from there, I'm going to actually talk about the impact of WAFM to date from 13-14 through to 16-17, and also looking prospectively 17-18. So if you look at page 30, the most significant impact was the RAS FTE need. So it decreased from 15-16 from 18,600 to basically 18,000. So that was a decrease of 3.4% related to the FTE. How did that impact the WAFM need? Well, since it impacts every single aspect of the WAFM funding need, from salaries, benefits, training, was about the same. It was about a 3.5% decline. So it caused it to decrease about $82.8 million. And I should back up and give you the highest level picture, and that is how much has WAFM changed overall. So overall decreased from 15-16 by about $30 million, which is a drop of about 1.3%. The most significant factor, I just mentioned RAS-FTE needs. The second most significant factor was actually an increase based on salary adjustments. So based on the Schedule 7-8 data from the courts, the salaries caused the RAS increase by about $43 million. So the salaries, on average, increased about 2.6%. And the and since those impact the salaries and the benefits, but not the OE need, it increased the WAFM need by 1.8%, so about $43 million. Then we have some very smaller impacts, both on the positive and the negative. The OE need per FTE adjustment, so this is the first adjustment to the OE need per FTE since its inception, caused it to increase about $12 million, about 0.5%. See the OE need for FTE based on clusters, so that you'll see the 16 amounts and 16, 17 amounts have two values. So the first value is for cluster one, and the second value, so in this example, 16, the 27,928, that's for the cluster one port. 20,027 is for all the other clusters, clusters two, three, four. So those amounts increased a little bit more significantly for cluster one than they did for cluster two. They had 6.1%. For cluster one and 3.2% for cluster two. And overall, it impacted the loss of need by about 0.5%, about $12 million. I actually expect this number to increase a little bit more significantly next year because the 3-year average that we used for the OE need for FTE included 12, 13, 13, 14, 14, 15. 12, 13 had a significantly smaller OE need for FTE dollar amount than the other 2 years, and that was because of the reductions that were allocated in that year. So, of course, tend to spend less on their OE need that year to, when they're tightening their belt, so to speak. The BLS salary adjustment, that increased by like 0.5%, and the 80-10-58 changed by less than 0.5%. So these items had smaller impact on it, but the net result was a $30 million decrease basically driven by the RAS FTE need decline. So the following pages, you'll see 6C. And actually, if you look on page 26 and 27, I broke out the attachments into groupings. So the first grouping is just the detail of how we calculate the WAFM need, right? So that would be attachments 6B through 6H. And they'll show you the different factors that are included in calculating the FTE need, and then we'll actually provide you with last year's WAFM based allocation. So 6B through 6H would be on pages 32 through 44, but I'm sorry, through 41. Then what Sherry was referring to previously, on page 42, this is the actual allocation, and this makes the assumption that we're going to receive $20 million as proposed in the governor's budget in January, that we'll receive $20 million in new funding for the courts. So this is the actual reallocation of dollars in 2017. This not only includes the allocation, reallocation of the $20 million, but actually looks at the reallocation of the $214 million that you received in the prior years, as well as the 30% reallocation you received in prior years, is now 40%. Going back to page 28, I'm sorry, 27. And then provides what the courts on 6J, 6K, 6L. 6J, this provides you with what the court's WAFM allocation is. So this is comparing funding level compared to its funding need. Now, in 6J was used to make a comparison of what the charts and the tables that follow this, it's based on what's reflected.
Paul, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
The narrative is that there are any courts eligible for funding floor allocation adjustments?
Yes.
I'm only seeing six. What are, I'm missing something.
So, I think that's actually
oh, yeah, it was. That's the difference.
But it's actually reflected in attachments 6F, and I believe it's page 66. On
page 66 of the set, you have the FTE loss factor, and you'll see columns U and columns Y. Column U is what which courts qualify for the funding for 1560, and column Y is the part of the
1570.
Okay. So actually, there are 9 courts in 1570. We're going for, but I have to go back to that. So 6 these are basically details of the calculation of the WAFM need as well as the WAFM allocation. 6M through 6S are basically ways of kind of at how WAFM has impacted the courts since 1340. So 6M looks at the adjustment, and it then does a few different things. It looks at the amount of funding for those courts that have a negative net allocation based on the reallocation of historical funding as well as new funding. It also looks at the amount of funding. If they're not a floor court, the amount of funding that they would that would need to be allocated to the trial courts overall, TCTF, for them to be moved back to zero. So you'll see that, and I usually have page numbers in front of me, but you'll see that page 48, actually 48 and 49, I guess, or
47.
Yeah, 47, I'm sorry, 47 to 48. You'll see that in column I, column M, and column Q. And anytime it's a court with a negative, because this excludes the funding floor adjustment, it reflects that in that column M or column I, M, or Q by stating floor. So there are some floor courts that that because they're actually the graduated funding floor, not the the bottom level $750,000 funding floor, but the graduated funding floor. Some of them have actually had positive net adjustments, and so you don't see them reflected here. You only see 4 courts reflected here. And 6O. These are basically just 2 charts just to show the progression of courts funding as a percentage of their need. Times the 1340. So the first is all the courts except for the funding floor courts, and the second is just the funding floor courts. And the reason why we broke those 2 apart is because of the funding floor courts kind of they skew the results. And so if we include them all together, the chart would be much larger and it would make it more difficult to read. So we split them out and show them separately because the funding floor courts exceed 100% in many cases.
The courts
that the base funding floor, so there are 2 courts, yes, that are at the bottom of the level of the South Financiera. And because of that, they continue to exceed that floor, and they will continue to exceed that floor unless their funding needs grow.
But they grow a lot.
Yes. So their funding need grows, and then that's racial decline, but otherwise, it'll probably stay above 200%.
Sam, did you have a question?
Yes, Colin. I was wondering in the 4 courts, with the experience we've had with WAFM, have the funds been used or have there been funds returned
from any of these courts?
If the WAFM 4 is.
You're saying that the 1% of balance reduction? So, one of those courts has had a reduction for 2 consecutive years. A significant amount. The other courts have not really had multiple years of reductions. So, and the court that did have multiple years of reduction, they also had other
other things going on at the court that could also account for that, not having to do with operations, but like not having to do with the fact that the court can't even spend the money, but the fact that it had some operational problems that they were resolving. So that may also explain, those factors may also explain why they had 2 years of fixing the fund balance.
So is the floor of the correct amount, or should it be more or less?
I don't actually know, because I don't know whether or not the actual operational need of the courts. I mean, I can calculate based on what their staffing needs are stated are, but I can't really assess whether or not if that's the minimum workload. That's not in my area.
Well, I can give you the history of how Waltham got to it. They actually took one CEO from a small court and went and spent time while she went through her books. She opened all of her books, showed all the expenses that she had, and it was, I thought, the most transparent process I had ever seen. And I know Jay Chatters was very involved in trying to calculate the floor by using that, and I think there may have been two, but I do remember one in particular. So I think it's about as close as we're going to get, and I don't have any objection if they return things under the 1%, because it means they didn't spend it, comes back to the pot, which then gets reallocated, right? So I don't know if there would be a better way to do it, because their situations are, you know, small courts have different situations like we do. So it's about as actual as we could get, recognizing that they are just going to be funded at a higher level, because they have these needs because they're so small.
And I think part of the issue was is when they do have one little off kind of an issue, it blows everything to smithereens.
I think Sam's is a very fair question, but I also think that, you know, the total cost is $400,000, and for that we're ensuring the access to justice in some places where it can't. We couldn't necessarily guarantee it, so I think it's a worthwhile expense.
Yeah.
It's also what it's all by, and it was actually by the closer what courts.
It was.
So they, I mean, they did do a lot. I just think I can't make that assessment.
They opened their books. They were really transparent.
Right. So, I mean, it was thorough. I'm just saying that that's something I can't really make an assessment on.
Yeah.
You have to set the floor somewhere.
Yeah.
I think the point Tanya makes is a good one too. Those courts are so small that any change is going to be impactful.
Oh yeah. Something that we would see is just a blip on the screen and not even notice has a really adverse impact to them.
You have to put an oil change in your court card, and all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Well, we've dealt with a couple of smaller courts up there. We're going through their collections issues, and in, you know, one county, a psych eval would blow the budget.
Yeah.
One,
right.
and that
one psych eval away from being in the red.
Yeah, that number is only six. That's 6.5 positions, including a court executive officer.
That's pretty small.
Yeah, so that's 5 positions plus OE and you know, and all the salaries and everything else is calculated based off of, you know, the Waltham calculations that we're doing for everything else. So it's a number with a lot of information behind it.
Yep.
So moving on to 6P. Page 51. Basically, what this does is it shows over time two things. One, it shows just how courts level of underfunding or their has changed over time, and also it shows how the gap between the highest and lowest court has.
Yeah.
It through 17 to. Will be the lowest underfunded court. So Kern, starting in 14-15, 50%, and 18, and this is also not expecting any additional funding beyond the $20 million in 16-17, would be at 66%. So this just shows that what was it
intended
to do, which was reallocate whether the actual need, you know, appropriate for any new courts. Those questions, you know, you can continue to discuss that, but to base off have so So I'm just gonna reference, I'm not actually gonna go into much detail on table. Just to provide you with more detail, table 3 provides the Wasm adjustment, so you can actually see the cumulative Wasm adjustments over time and see what the net result is through 17-18. I can also provide this information, like I've already provided to San Diego, I can provide this to the Excel workbook if your staff wants to go through this information. And then table basically provides not just the Wasm adjustments, but all adjustments over time. And then the last attachment is 10 pages of detailed comparisons, court by court, between what occurred in 15-16 and what occurred in 15-17 for each of the Wasm variables. So Wasm funding needs, RAS FDA needs, the benefits, all those things. And then also looks at the clusters and does a comparison of where the courts, the specific clusters, where they've seen those changes. So how many courts by cluster within each grouping to see how that changes over time.
We don't need a motion to carry on, right? I mean, was this just informational?
It was just a discussion item. I think update us on how it's working. I think Sherry's right. Discussion at this point, any concerns people have, but didn't anticipate any action being taken because it appears, not to oversimplify it, but Wasm's doing what it was intended to do.
Right.
Judge Kuhl?
Expect that the results of Leah's workload study will be factored in next year.
So this is 17 for next year.
Can they say whether that's going to be a large dislocation? March. So now we have these hundreds of thousands of data points that we're putting together. So it's still a little too early to say. I haven't seen anything preliminary yet. But it would capture differences in workload related to realignment, Prop 47. So I expect at least on the criminal side there may be some differences.
And that doesn't get phased in, correct? That'll just be a bump up or a bump down, I mean, depending.
Correct. Well, workload is averaged over, the workload changes are averaged over a 3-year period. But now the changes in the time study, how much time is needed to handle one misdemeanor case, that will just come in.
We've not in the past phased it enough, just enough itself.
That's good.
Is anybody studying why the caseload is down and what that means for access to justice?
From a negative sense or a positive, in other words?
Well, both. I'm concerned about raising fees and caseloads going down, or whether things are being driven into arbitration, or whether things are going to private court systems. I don't know where it is, but it seems to me this is a significant phenomenon. And maybe it's not a kickback issue, but I'm just curious to know whether anybody is looking at that, because clearly it affects our funding, but more fundamentally it affects our branch.
Do you have a joke comment, or?
I was going to chime in only because I happen to know, but you know, the planning and research unit, when they put out the annual reports, we've had some discussions. I'm on a subcommittee to try and look at the numbers and provide some analysis of why, and in some cases, they can't tell whether it's related to, say, access to justice via the closure of court facilities, or whether it's a trend. I mean, for example, reductions in small claims and awful detainers may be related to the closure of smaller courthouses versus the reduction in traffic citations, which technically wouldn't be related to where a court is located, but to law enforcement activities, which continue to go down. So at the end of the day, it was more anecdotal than factual.
Although Prop 47 and 81 and 9 have
right.
Huge.
But we've been wrestling with those same questions, trying to address, is it the chicken or the egg, you know?
Because, the piece of it for us is, look, if this is a trend downwards, it's going to affect where our numbers are over time and what courts should be planning to do. And that's clearly critical, but I'm very concerned about why cases are
not. I could discuss what our local condition is because we've looked at it over 20 years. But that doesn't, I don't think that's a statewide value, yeah.
I can tell you both civil and criminal filings have been declining since fiscal year 89 and continue to decline. This year, actually, we're projecting for the first time, well, right now I'm projecting for the first time that our first paper civil filings may actually increase for the first time since 89. So we're not sure what that means yet, what that indicates, but it's been a trend that's been continuing for many years.
Comments, thoughts?
No, carry on. It looks good.
Yeah. Okay, that's okay. So the carry on looks good. I interpret to be it's doing what it's supposed to do. There doesn't appear to be any reason for TICBAC to make any recommendations or take any actions. Mike?
Just a question back to Leah, Judge Kuhl's point. So we'll get the new workload numbers, which will apply to 17-18.
Right.
Now, we've applied to the prior years the old workload numbers. Will that continue, or will we go back and readjust so that we're now looking at the three-year period based on new numbers for all 3 years, or is it 2 years old, one, and then that progression continues?
So the way we do it is we take the 3 years of filings data. So for this year's RAS FTE, it was 14, 15, 13, 14, and 12, 13. We take the three-year average of those numbers and then apply the case weight to that.
Right.
So next year, we'll take the next 3 years of filings data, take a three-year average, and apply the new case weight
to that. Okay, that's what I was asking.
Okay.
Music and open the envelope.
See if we survive.
Call the wrong name. Okay. All right. Any other discussion on item six? I do want to compliment staff Leah and Colin for putting this all together. I can tell you through conversations with Colin that this has been more than a full-time activity. And I hope he doesn't mind me sharing, but he's going to have a few days off, well-deserved. So thank you very much for putting this all together.
You mean Sunday other than Saturday and Sunday?
Yeah, no, believe it or not. Or you mean just Sunday?
Right. It's only Sunday. Yeah.
It usually is, yeah. We're giving him a break. So my proposal now is lunch has arrived. It's a little bit early, but we started early. So for those on the phone, we're going to take – I think we're doing well on the agenda. By the time everybody gets their food and chats, we'll just make a goal of Rhea coming back online at noon. That'll give us about half an hour for lunch. We're doing well and fine on the agenda. We'll be done by 1:30 at the latest, I think. All right?
Check
out. So those of you that have rejoined us on the phone, we'll make sure you rejoin us again at noon.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Welcome back. Jeff, are you still with us?
I am still with you, Judge.
Excellent. Thank you very much. We conducted no business over the lunch hour except for brief comments on the food selection. So something else taken care of. We're well on schedule with our agenda. I'll remind everybody that we covered item one, item two, and item six. We're now going to item three, plans for FY 2018-19 and beyond as far as a discussion item that is – let's see.
It's two charts.
Great. So Colin's got two charts on pages. I think they have the numbers 1 and 2 on the page, but they're really pages 5 and 6. Colin, you want to run us through those pie charts?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm just checking the lines.
Basically,
basically, both these charts are showing the status of court of the WAFM-based allocation and the historical allocation based on the 16-17 WAFM funding needs at room 17-18. The first pie looks solely at the historical base funding. So this is $1.4 billion, and it shows that through 17-18, as you're aware, the scheduled reallocation, 50% of that would be done. So that's $720 million. But in addition to that, because of the new funding reallocated, which would include the $20 million in the governor's proposed budget for 16-17, an additional 16.3% would be reallocated through that. So in essence, only 33.7% of the historical allocation would remain after 17-18 to be reallocated. Now, looking at it, a larger view of basically all of the WAFM-related funding for the courts, the second chart on page 6 shows how much of the funding, total funding, so including not only the historical allocation but the new funding, has been allocated or reallocated using WAFM. And so, again, we have the $720 million. So what we're talking now, we're talking about $1.7 billion. So this isn't all of the courts, I think, but it's a very large piece of it, very, very large. So 41.4% of it is allocated for the scheduled reallocation, 13.5% through the new funding reallocation. The new funding allocation, 17.2%, which also includes benefits, leaving just 27.9% of the court's funding that is related to the historical allocation basis. So all the other funding through 17-18 would be allocated or reallocated based on law. So that just gives you a sense of kind of where we would stand at the end of 17-18 based on implementation of WAFM as the new funding methodology.
Concerns, comments?
Moving in the right direction, right?
Yes.
Right. And I obviously wasn't in the room for the genesis of WAFM, so for those that were, Sherry, are you any concerns about how we're moving, or?
No, I think it's doing what it was intended. The benefits, of course, including cost reimbursement, really, and it's a year behind, and there was 1 year where we weren't funded, that we continue with a funding gap that was never filled. So I like the chart better that doesn't include benefits, because that kind of shows really the historical funding that was reallocated rather than just the cost reimbursement. But I think it's definitely doing what was intended in terms of equalizing the available funding. It does not solve the problem of all of us not having enough funding. It, you know, was
doesn't change the size of the pie, just how it's being divided. Right.
Right.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other thoughts? Well, okay.
I think, though, the discussion, though, isn't it what we do beyond this chart?
Do we go ahead?
Yeah. And how do we proceed with the remaining 33%?
Okay. So let's go there. How do we move beyond? Thoughts?
Well, I wasn't on the original committee, but I seem to remember the idea that we got to a certain point and then said this is this much damage as we should inflict.
No, it was all a compromise. Every single thing made, every decision made in that room was a compromise. There were people in the room that felt it should go 50-100% in 2 years, and there were a lot of people in the room that thought that it should be reallocated over 10 years. The 5 years was a complete compromise. The reason we stopped at 50% was twofold. One was it was to send a message to the governor and the legislature that we can only go halfway.
That's it.
We can only go halfway. You have to meet us halfway. And the dollar for dollar was to kind of say, if you want an accelerator to get us there, this is how you do it, by giving us new money, and then you can get us all equally funded. But there was never an agreement ever that we would stop at 50%. It was kind of the compromise in the room was we wanted to send a message to the legislature and the governor, and there was always discussion that we would need to come back and revisit what happens when 17-18 is over. So it's kind of been on our to-do list. It's been on our parking lot list since even Waltham was started, but we didn't want to have that, we didn't want to solve what we were hoping would be a solution, which is give us more money.
So, cross that bridge yet?
Well, I think we need to, because I think that you really only have 2 years. And if you're going to want to look at if you need the judicial council staff to do modeling and different kinds of ideas on how you spread it or any other, you know, is it, if the methodology changes from 5 years, is it going to be 10 years, is it going to be, you know, whatever it is, the judicial council staff will need time, I would think, to do some modeling to see how it would work.
So what are the thoughts of alternatives? What's, if nothing changes, what happens?
Well, it would stop. Right, and only new money would be matched dollar for dollar.
Okay.
Matched
$2 for dollar, but right.
Yeah, right.
But still, it stopped short of completion, and there's no reason to stop short of completion.
Right. So then what is the next step if we don't stop short of completion?
I don't have any opposition to, I don't know that many people will have opposition to continuing the glide path. So take it another 2 or 3 years to get to 100% implementation, but I think 2 or 3 years is appropriate. That's no longer or shorter than it should be.
3 years?
2 years.
2 years.
It seems to me, in that spirit, if we just say we're going to go another 10% and match, and 10% match, hoping to continue at least some incentive that they continue to get the dollars in, that has the compounding effect of maybe getting us there in 2 or 3 years. But I think from a planning perspective, to say we're going to go another 10%, another, gives at least some of us the idea of being able to look out and see what the practical effect's going to be. But I do want to try to continue to incentivize the next governor, because by then we will be in the throes of the next governor, with the idea of saying, look, if you can put more into the pot, we're willing to match it up for the sake of getting to equity.
Getting this done quicker, but if not,
right.
10%, 2 years out, 10% each year.
Hoping that they match it and then we get it done.
Right.
Because if we're, you know, two-thirds, three-quarters of the way there, a few matching dollars more is really going to continue to accelerate the process.
All right, so how do we put that in a, it would be a recommendation from here to tick back. How do we put that in a motion?
Before we go that far, do we want to have Colin maybe calculate 2 or 3 different approaches and then take a look at them before we were to go there, or do we want to do that? Do we want to set a structure and then just go with it?
So, Mike, were you saying that you would do 10% over the next 5 years to get us the next 50? Or what would
I'm saying continue to go in 10%.
For 2 years.
Well, or and match as we've been doing the additional dollars, which, you know, if we get any kind of additional money, obviously accelerates that process.
Right.
So the end game would end 5 years if we got nothing.
That's what I wanted to make sure. I thought you said
that. Well, I'm hoping it's not 5 years because But I guess in the most theoretical world, yeah, that's possible because we're. Well, not even 50% out.
They said it 2 years. Increasing 10% per year until it's done.
If I understand the chart, Colin, we've essentially, over the base year, the money that is being historically reallocated, we've touched 2/3 of that money. 50% based on the straight 50%, and another 16+% based on the 2-for-1. If we continue that same... Right. If we continue that process, it's a 3.7-year proposition.
Right, exactly. So I like this.
I'll
clarify it. It's simply that we add 10% until it's completed.
Versus just committing for 10% for 2 years, which I guess, I mean, I don't know why it'd be necessary in 2 years to reevaluate it.
Yeah.
You just say, and as Tonya said, if we get nothing, then for 5 years it's 10%, and then we're done.
Just a clarification, 10% each year with new money being matched.
Yes.
Yeah, continue, yes.
Because that incentivizes them to give us something.
Right.
in order to get us to the end. But if they wanted to, you know, do this at it.
And even currently, it's less than 5 years because, like Mike just said, as Colin pointed out, we're already at 67%.
Okay. So the motion is continue with the allocation of 10% until fully
100% WAFM.
Yeah. WAFMized, to coin Judge Good's term.
I'll second that.
So Judge Conklin, if there's a down year, what happens? A reduction.
Pardon me?
That's actually
right.
One of the things we want to ask.
So we can bring that in here if you want.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens if there's...
In a down year, I'm not sure we'd want to do 10%.
So what we were going to suggest is that to the workload, we add a item on discussing how to allocate unspecified reductions to the trial court trust, whether it follows the same methodology that the increases follow or... if it's a different approach.
You know, it's interesting, the Utah Waffen Group decided to look at each reduction independently. I don't know if that was the right decision or not. Looking back, I think it was because so many of our reductions were unique in nature. For example, the benefits, you know, the benefits were not filled. We decided to do it by historical. Even court employees pay 100% of their benefits. LA does, for example, pay 100% of its benefits. And it paid, you know, 30% or whatever it was of that for other courts. And I think those kinds of decisions allow the group flexibility to make that decision. I know there was discussion at one point that we should make reductions at the same. There was one time we made them on historical, one time we made them on WAFM. So I don't know if we want to make a hard and fast or not. Look at it each year if they're different. I don't know.
I was looking at it more from the standpoint that if there is a reduction, however we allocate the reduction, at least we would say in advance we wouldn't do a 10% reallocation in that year. Or does that not make sense?
Go ahead, Judge Good. I'm sorry.
The question I was hitting here, you were saying this is 10% of what? I think the answer is 10% of the amount of money allocated to the trial courts. So the first year we took 10% of the money allocated to the trial courts and divided it by WAFM. Next year we took 20% of the money allocated to the trial courts. Next year 30%. So if we just, even if there's a reduction, if what we're doing is saying, you know, now we're up to both 50% plus, then we go to 60%, 70%, 80% plus. So if there's a reduction, everybody's sharing the reduction, but you're also sharing it more equitably than you would otherwise by doing it with WAFM. The question divides for me as to, since we have the dollar for dollar in addition, if you have a reduction, do you sort of back off that? I don't know if you're talking about stopping all of WAFM in a down year, or just reversing the dollar for dollar, or just quite what you're doing with that slice of the pie?
Well, I'm thinking, no, because it's supposed to, we get a 1.5% reduction in our overall budget, sort of,
right.
What do we do? So I think Sherry's saying, well, we decide how to allocate that reduction in that year, depending on the circumstances, because it might have been directed toward a particular part of our budget, or we just don't know in advance. And that makes sense. But then what is the implication of that for, I mean, I think the very implication of saying we decided on a one-time basis says we would not be doing a 10%, we would not be distributing 10% of the money specifically according to the new workload in that year, according to WAFM in that year. We would be allocating a reduction.
Yeah, right. That makes some sense to me because the courts that are shifting funds to a more underfunded court would get a double whammy. They would get the reduction from the new 10% plus or 1.5% if the decision is made to either apply the reduction based on historical or WAFM if it's for the whole base. So I don't know. I mean, that...
I would rather see us wait until we're closer to whatever needs to occur, given the universe of too many moving objects I mean, there may be some restoration in addition to, which might influence the decision. There may not be. There may be some other legal, statutory, procedural change we need to incorporate. And I think whoever's on the budget committee at that point ought to have the ability to respond most directly to the event and not something that is at least a couple of years down the road. And by then, maybe we're fully Waffamized because they've thrown money in or not or whatever.
And is there a way to modify the if there is a motion, to the extent of assuming no reduction? Just preface it with assuming no reduction, continue to 10%.
Well, I don't think you even have to do that. I mean, the original Waffam model was set up, right?
Keep them separate.
To keep them separate.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So would you feel like
all we're doing is adding years.
Right, you're
leaving
reduction.
Future committees the freedom, the ability to
deal with the reduction. So we deal with them in separate directions. And they might overlap depending on what the committee at that time decided to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that would need, I'm trying to just, it, was the motion?
Year until completed with new money being matched.
And it would add 10%. To the, you'd be adding 10% to the amount of trial court trust fund that would be allocated under Waffam, right?
Is that the best way to say it? Because
yeah,
we did use 15, 30, 40, and 50,
yeah.
Right?
The
allocation of the historical base.
So adding 10% of the historical base to the allocation.
But right. Instead of using 10%, we use 15, 30, 40, 50, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So maybe it ought to be 60, 70.
80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80
percent was, is it 60, 70,
80,
90, right.
Well, it'll be,
it built on,
it'll be
it
80, like 83.3 or something like that. So in the final year, it's 16
right.
point.
But the number you plug into your spreadsheet
right.
is going to be 60, 70.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It's like, so, it, so I'm just saying it'll just go 80 and then it'll go 83.3.
Right.
So knowing that in the fourth year, it's just going to be 3%. You still want to do 10, 10, 10, and then 3.
Well, I think if you
well,
say
it could change if there's matching
funding. Depending
budget.
On new
right.
funding.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think it's a moving target.
Yeah.
Right.
Until April 9th.
So do you have that?
I said add 10% of historical base each year to existing allocation.
Oh, okay.
Each year until completed, 100% being matched.
Okay.
Dollar for dollar.
So Judge Cofer, is that your motion?
Dollar
yes,
for dollar.
Is there a second to that?
I'll second it.
Okay. By Tonya. Any further discussion? Jeff, anything you have?
I think that's exactly the way I would have set it up as well. And I figure reductions, I understand that we may be a billion upside down based on the projections even for this year. The governor's wrestling with that now. But if we start to see that come into play in the next year or two, those reductions are sort of built into the WAFM formula as well, I think, in terms of how the reductions are allocated. So I think if we say that it's, the intention is 60, 70, 80, and that closes us out to get to the what hopefully is then everybody across the board even, then going forward, we've got the model to always make sure that we're set.
Good point.
Is it dollar for dollar or $2 for $1?
What's dollar for dollar? But
you take a dollar, add it to the dollar, and reallocate $2.
Okay,
yep.
I want to make sure we're not
yep.
changing anything
yep.
by saying dollar
yep,
for dollar.
Thank you.
Yep. We match dollar for dollar, but reallocate $2.
Right.
By matching dollar, right. Okay. On that being understood and clarified, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Aye. All right. So that will be the recommendation that will be included in the report for kickback. I guess that it's at the meeting coming up on Tuesday?
Yes.
Thursday.
Week
the 19th, that's Thursday. That way Colin has a day to work on it when he gets back.
So I have a question just for some historical context. So was the discussion with WAFM set up was that the WAFM was a model for allocating funds but not for distributing reductions?
Yeah.
Or the idea that reductions would not be workload-based?
Well,
because
and I'm going to be very
honest about what happened. That was harder to compromise because there was, yeah, so the answer was the decision was we were going to take each reduction separately to figure out what would work best for that particular reduction. In some instances, they were done based on a historical base, and in some instances, they were applied to WAFM. And I think there was a feeling that it was too difficult to apply in WAFM because those courts that were underfunded but not as significantly underfunded as others, right, were taking a bigger hit because they were already losing under WAFM, and then if you put the reduction under WAFM, they were taking a bigger piece. So that's why it was decided that each reduction would need to be looked at separately, and I think it worked pretty well that way because you kind of have a better clue of what kind of reduction it is.
Yeah.
Sorry, side conversation about the next item. All right. Okay, so Mike, did that answer your question?
Yes, thank
okay,
you.
Great. All right, so moving right along, which we're actually doing, now turning to item four, identify technology funding streams with JCTC and CITMF assistance. Heather, are you on?
Yes, I just got on.
Perfect timing. Okay, we're now on item four on the agenda. If there's anything you want to add to the discussion as we move on, so I'll turn to Colin. We have, this begins at page 7 of your attachment 4A, page 7 through 24.
So just since we're starting the discussion on this item, I just wanted to provide you with some of the work that's been done to date. This actually isn't the entire body of work as it relates to this. There are a couple other items that they worked on since then, but they were actually very specific, and so I left them out because they're actually specific in their purpose, and they weren't kind of like more broadly defined like these were, which were just general technology funding streams. But this was actually published in 2014, and this was part of a larger report that was about 250 pages regarding technology planning, funding, and governance, I think. Governance, strategy, and funding. And so the thing that I would recommend that you look at, this does provide kind of the initial information, and we can go into more detail if you like. It's on page 11. We identified the existing funding sources related to trial for technology funding. And the two ones that are actually very specific and that you're, I'm sure, already aware of are the 2% automation fund revenue, and that's basically retained at a state fund level in the State Trial Court Improvement and Modernization Fund, and the replacement of 2% automation fund revenues, which are distributed to the courts from the Trial Court Trust Fund, and those are roughly about $11 million, so not a large revenue stream, and the 2% automation fund is roughly $14 million, or roughly around there. It may have actually decreased slightly. So those are two of the dedicated technology funding streams. They identify these other ambiguous funding streams, basically being state trial court funds. But none of those monies are actually specifically committed for technology use and technology only. So this kind of gives you a sense of the kind of a limit of the extent of funding that's available just for technology and technology only. The other areas that that this group, which was actually under the was overseen by the JCTC, this was the Technology Planning Task Force, which was overseen by the JCTC, which is chaired by Justice Blau. But this TBTF was actually chaired by the chair of the CITMF, which is the Court Information Technology Management Forum. Is that correct, Heather?
It's correct.
And Heather is the current chair.
I am the current chair.
Ruth O. Young was the chair at the time. This was written.
He was the liaison, but he was not the chair at the time, but he was a liaison.
Okay.
And JC staff helped in writing, actually providing the information related to it. But the other areas that they have actually discussed, or JCTC has discussed, are more specific in aspect, and that was basically just identifying technology funding streams for V3 and moving the course off of V3 and running a VCP for that, and for the sustain course and moving them off of sustain, or trying to get funding for that, get those courses replaced sustain and move them off of, potentially move them off of the VCTC. So this is where we stand today. This is kind of where we've gone. We haven't identified any other funding for trial courts, but just wanted to give you a starting point so we're not kind of rebuilding the wheel, so to speak.
Sure.
So on page 19, where it talks about funding would be allocated to individual trial courts each year by judicial counsel based on WAFM, what they're talking about is the potential ongoing funding for technology, right?
Yeah.
So that's something that we would probably want to talk about at some point, because I don't think you would just necessarily throw it into WAFM. It might be based on other things, like my experience is in the federal court. We had funding formulas for everything, and there was always an automated funding formula. So I have been a big proponent of doing it this way to make sure that we all have adequate funding to support our local needs. But anyway, so I see that as something that may go on our to-do list in the future at some point, because I'm not sure you just take a pot of money and throw it in to WAFM, because some of the server needs and other requirements are going to be based sometimes on the geographic size of your county, the number of courts, and a lot of other things that you have to consider. So I don't know at what point we might want to add that to our to-do list, but we do need to look at that.
And at least that item, just to be clear, on that item, which starts on page 18, that they're being specific about just a certain type of cost. Which is okay, so I mean, it's just
server replacement,
right,
or local cost. But to throw it into WAFM doesn't make sense, because you don't necessarily need to add to that money, supervisor manager ratios and things like that. It could be a different formula that then has a column in WAFM that gets just like 1058 funding, and it's another funding.
It's a lot
hard
to find a cost.
Right.
That.
So,
you're on some kind of replacement cycle whatever, and if you give it out in a certain fashion
right.
to WAFM, you wouldn't have an ability to necessarily bank that money in order to deal with your 4 years.
And WAFM wasn't made to allocate automation money, which is really based on FTEs and judicial officers, the number of locations, and based on that, what your server ratio is. And, there's things that need to be considered, and then you would divide it by three if we agree that as a branch we're going to replace every third year, or we divide it by four if it's going to be every fourth year. So there's work to be done there, is what I'm saying. We might want to consider that, because if we get to a point where there is a funding stream that we need to consider, we're going to have to help develop that.
So this is on our 15-16 workload or work plan, so perhaps we should move it to next year or even beyond, but maybe modify what the actual task is, because the task is identify the funding streams. There aren't any at this point, but maybe it needs to be identify the funding streams and develop a methodology
for allocation.
Right.
Absolutely.
And so do we want to propose a different time frame to deal with this in? 16-17, 17-18. We actually haven't started the 17-18 list. So if we feel like it needs a good, a good period of time, or we can
it's not going to be a hard formula to be. I mean, based on like.
I'm really thinking the hard part is finding a funding stream.
Funding
stream, and then determining whether the branch
allocating
is a 3 or 4 year plan replacement.
Right.
So we're kind of mixing this agenda item and the next agenda item, which is fine as far as our work plan. So, Sherry, are you proposing that we, because right now, number one on 15-16 is identify technology funding streams. I think we can leave it at that. The only question is timing. And we then put that on, we don't even have a 17-18 yet, a 17-18?
I would leave that to the excellent co-chairs that lead this committee to decide when you think we have capacity. I think we wait until we have a funding stream, but we need to tag it, then it's our job to figure it out.
Yeah, I think we move it to 17-18, but I do think that we specifically say
we develop a methodology at that time based on whatever the funding stream is and whatever the intent is of the funding.
And I agree with what it's going to cover. I think we agree with what it's going to cover. I think the document's got a couple of little glitches that need to be fixed, but I do think it's...
Waffen funding needs, just to be clear also, though, for the OE need for FTE does include all of the technology costs, of course, for...
So we then rebel, we have to
unravel that
piece. Yeah, so you could break that piece out and we'll just have that as a separate.
Once we get there, but we're not there yet.
Else?
Yeah, we're not there yet. Right. I'm just saying, we already have those GLs, so we could...
Do you think anybody have any...
Just good, did you have a...
I'm struggling with chicken and egg problem. Are we more likely to get funding stream if we have a methodology the way it was with Waffen, or can the methodology wait until we've identified the funding stream?
That's all I'm asking.
Question, I think.
I guess we could consult with Justice Slough on that. I'm not sure in this instance how we could even start to talk about a methodology until we know the stream. But
that's why I thought you.
Right. It's just.
I would need to understand what's in the OE&E that's technology related. Does it include the 2% money, or is that something else? There's different pieces, and of course, everybody spends that money differently, or not. I mean, a lot of fund balances, I understand, just hearing of various bars and restaurants, that was how courts, law courts built fund balances. Others kind of spent all their 2% money. So, we're kind of all over the place on it, and I would want to understand better how it's all baked in the cake, so to speak.
Colin's just commenting he can try to do that for the next meeting, so.
Okay, so why don't we just push it here? Because that will be in 16-17.
Right.
So we'll just move it to 16-17 and roll it over.
Just move it down one.
Okay.
Right, so we'll take one of 15-16 and move it to 16-17. Okay.
And technology, sure, the definition of that sure is changing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm just looking at the evolution of the types of projects that my IT staff handle now and how it's gone over the years. It was strictly if it was a wire and it had a keyboard on it, it was there. So now we're getting into video remote systems, record, we're getting more into the AV, courtroom technology. Wi-Fi stuff. I mean, it's just all over the place. So it's going to be hard to get our hands around and define.
There's definitely going to be multifaceted to it, I would expect.
Yeah.
And I will comment, and I don't mean to be mixing apples and oranges, but Justice Slough has been very receptive and active in sort of collaborating with us as far as VCPs go from technology and that type of thing. So she's really, obviously there may come a point where our committee has its perceptions of VCPs and JCTC has theirs, and they may not specifically meld, but I think, candidly, we're working towards that approach where the JCT, the BCPs would be joint in the sense that from both of our, recognizes ours as a subcommittee, pardon me, ours as a advisory committee and hers as an internal committee. But there's been a lot of work there, and she's really been very active in staying in touch with us on that. So any further discussion on that point? We've kind of moved, as we've been talking, along with the last item on the agenda now that we've covered six, and that's our subcommittee work plan. That's there on page 25. So we've already talked about one of the items that Rebecca had noted we should have talked, and we've already covered is allocation of undesignated reductions. We already talked about that. Just Judge Kuhl brought that up. And we've decided, as far as when we talk about further implementation of WAFM, that's a separate way, a separate item to be dealt with, and that's the way we're going to do it. And we're taking item one on 15-16, moving it down to 16-17, as far as our work plan. Any other thoughts about our work plan, Sherry?
We would want to add the, when we talked about earlier, for the judicial vacancies that are moved, the
right.
Yeah.
Yep. reallocation methodology versus new judge methodology.
Right.
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 So we can make that part of 1617, monitor or review, because we don't know yet what's going to happen.
Right.
So monitor and review as necessary. Judgeship reallocations. Does that make sense to everybody? Reallocations.
And number three under 1617 was really a statement more for judicial counsel staff to see whether or not there were any remaining funding sources that needed to be reviewed that were based on the old snapshot theory. You know, the 1058 dependency council trial court trust fund were all based on the snapshot. And so that's going to have to be something that we're going to have to do a deep dive to see if there's any remaining funding streams out there that need to be reviewed because we just haven't come across them. Or... Yes.
We have a big list right now.
I'm sure you do.
That needs further analysis.
Great, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay,
yeah.
There's a committee right there.
Yeah.
She just volunteered. We had on 1617, we had review AB 1058 revenue as an offset. I think we met looking at how 1058 figured into the Wacom calculation, but now we have to, I think, move down item 2. From 1516, because that's a continuing project, I believe.
It is.
So should we combine those two?
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
So in case anybody didn't hear, just so we're taking item 2 of 1516, combining it with item 2 of 1617, and keeping it on 1617.
You know, yeah, that's a good point. Are you going to move the civil assessment down to 1617 also?
It's a continuing project, so it is. We'll move it down. I mean, we made progress in 1516, and we're continuing, and that's a good point. On 1617, that is, I'm looking for it, item 3. So item 3 of 1617 will now migrate to, item 3 of 1516 will now migrate to 1617.
Okay.
Go ahead. No, that was.
And Judge Kuhl, actually, number 1, self-help funding is also part of that. Number 2 and Sam Ju's evaluation, correct? Is that continuing to be part of it?
I think, well, I don't know. I can't exactly remember what we were thinking about when we did review self-help funding allocation. I think that was something else. I think that was the IMF, the money in the IMF that goes to self-help funding.
I thought there was a component of that model in the FAMJU.
There is as well, but that's not the whole self-help funding. That's
got
just
it.
The
okay.
Family Law Facilitator program.
Oh, I think, okay. Right.
Well, then maybe we should specify review IMF self-help
okay.
funding.
Yeah, that's good.
There's actually IMF and TPPF combined,
right.
So I'm assuming you want to
look at both.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Looks like busy here.
Yeah, as always. Well, and I do. Any other comments? We're moving a little ahead of schedule, but not much. Now I'm going to quarter one. I know people have planes to catch. The allocation of undesignated. Yeah, we talked about that when we talked about future plans for WAFM. So you will note, by the way, on this committee structure, I'm designated self. As the interim co-chair, and it's been politely pointed out to me that as the chair of TICBAC, I should appropriately delegate things, and I've been in touch with Judge Kuhl, and she's been gracious enough to agree, and I don't know if she's regretting this, to essentially now step in.
Now that we've added everything.
Right. Along with, but I'm going to stay, I really enjoy this committee, so I'm going to stay here in a more quiet role. But Judge Kuhl will step up as the co-chair of this, along with Rebecca. I've convinced Rebecca to stay active on this, but Rebecca.
Well, my application has not been approved for another year, so we'll see how that goes. You know, I could be kicked to the curb.
I,
as you can tell, Rebecca and Colin are the two that are the most knowledgeable and active on these items.
We might be grouping together.
Don't tell them. But anyways, I appreciate the work of this subcommittee very much. I've been in touch with many of you, including, and Sherry and I have had some conversations about the way to most efficiently run these subcommittees. And, you know, there's always, candidly, there's a very practical financial impact that I didn't realize of the cost of having these meetings, which is not insignificant. And I think we need to be aware of that, considering our role is to try to be appropriately fiscally responsible, prudent. I, on the other hand, think sometimes these, getting us all in the room on these meetings is the most effective way to have these meetings. So I'm trying to balance that. But what I'm getting at is, as we, and I'm in the same way as far as I'm not positive what my role is going to be for next year on this committee. I'm hopeful, but we'll see. But anyway, there may be, I may be in touch with many of you to get your thoughts about streamlining these subcommittees, this being one of them, and other subcommittees to make them a more effective and useful voice for TICBAC as a whole, and maybe having some of this work actually go through TICBAC. I mean, I'm not sure how much of this needs to come from subcommittees. Sherry and I talked earlier, though, and she makes a good point that there's some of this work that has to go through subcommittees because it's so detailed. So don't be surprised if I'm in touch with all of you about that. Any other items of general concern as far as how things are going? What do we have to eat for lunch? Anything important? This is, again, I appreciate the work all of you are doing. I come to this party a little bit late, and there's so many of you in this room that have been in this. You developed this from the beginning, and I appreciate that. Yes,
one
Sam.
Thing, I would echo the idea of in-person meetings. I think they're helpful. I'll talk about by the time we left to get here this morning. Southern California, and it is an early day, but it just helps to see all the cues people are able to transmit in addition to the telephone. The telephone, you're
assuming it's working.
And it's working, that's true. And I remember a meeting I was attending by phone 10 years ago, and a member of the committee just blasted me for something they thought I had said, and I had not said a word. It was 2 or 3 years later before I got a chance to tell me that one thing. But I think that you just get a better sense of what's going on by being in person.
I agree, and it might sound counterintuitive, but I think sometimes actually to have subcommittees have in-person meetings and TICBAC as a whole, but sometimes like the next week's TICBAC meeting is a telephonic because a lot of that is just going to be, this is what the subcommittee said to do, this is what we're going to do. That's where the sometimes I certainly don't mean to downplay the importance of TICBAC because I think it's extremely important, but sometimes the work the entire committee does is really comprised of the subcommittee work. So I like that.
You know, I've been on committees and work groups and whatnot, and I'm thinking particularly with CTEC and ITEC, where they make really good use of the WebEx and webinar. And part of the thing, I agree with Sam, part of the value of being here in person is there's so much paper. You know, there's so many things to be looking at. Oh, there, we're on page 4, and we're looking at this, and that's something you can facilitate here. But, you know, if I would just suggest we keep in the back of mind, if our budget gets cut, you know, and travels come back, then we think more about using WebEx as a way, because that would, I think, go a long way towards being able to share the information, know at least what we're talking about, what we're pointing to. So just, I'm getting more comfortable. I still got a way to do it. I could never run a meeting myself on it, but I have found it to be a real effective way of communicating that information. So
I think with Stephen Thomas request to Mark Pacino, he approved it almost overnight. We our budget level. Just in-person meetings for the rest of the year. So I was pleased to see that staff recognized as well some of the effective work that gets done in the room.
I think that, just in my experience, that it's often easy to engage when you're looking at somebody and get them to engage in something where they might otherwise sit on the phone and say nothing.
Right. But on the other hand, we're making efficient use of the time because now everybody can make their plane. So if we do have these in-person meetings, I think trying to keep them as efficient as possible is a good thing. I know everybody travel a long distance Judge Holland, did you have a comment?
Judge, I think you struck a nice balance, you and Rebecca, between the telephonic conferences and the in-person conferences. Both have been productive, and I think that the telephonic conferences, where you're talking about what we're going to do, as opposed to reporting, I think that's a good way to handle it.
Good. Okay. All right. Thank you all very much.